Now, partly because of that, Lewis became a great lover of Norse mythology, and he loved Wagner, especially the Ring Cycle. And he always linked it to that first feeling, that intimation of this cold northern region. In fact, one of Lewis's lifelong friendships began, a young man named Arthur Greaves was an invalid. Lewis went to visit him, and when he walked in the room, he saw opened on his bed, or on the desk, a book of Norse mythology. And Lewis looked at Greaves, and Greaves looked at Lewis with that look that says, "You like this too?" And that one moment, that shared sense of northernness made them fast friends, and they wrote letters to each other their whole life, which have been collected in a 500-page book of their letters. Now, I'm really a romantic scholar, and joy sounds a lot like something that William Wordsworth talks about in his autobiography, The Prelude. It's what he calls, Wordsworth, spots of time. Now, what does Wordsworth mean by that? Well, spots of time are childhood encounters with the power of nature that, when recollected in later years, yield visionary power and insight. Wordsworth tells about a whole bunch of situations where the young Wordsworth had a mystical experience with nature that just sort of overawed him. And the older Wordsworth would recollect those spots of time, and he would use them to sort of rejuvenate and refresh himself. Now, there is a similarity between joy and spots of times in terms of that flash of desire, but there's a big difference, and let me explain. Whereas Wordsworth's spots of time point backwards nostalgically to something lost, Lewis's joy is a signpost that points forward to a richer world. Again, whereas Wordsworth's spots of times need to be hoarded up lest he lose the vision. In fact, the older Wordsworth was afraid he would forget the spots and lose his poetic powers. That's not the case with Lewis. Joy, on the other hand, must be let go of if the true vision is to come. So again, spots of joy point backwards. Lewis's joy points forward to a greater reality. Don't worry about the joy itself. Let the joy point you as a signpost forward. And this leads us to what is perhaps Lewis's most original contribution to the study of apologetics, which you will remember, apologetics means a logical defense of the Christian faith. Well, Lewis had an argument that often is called the argument by desire or the argument by joy. Here is how the argument by desire works. Just as the fact that we experience thirst is proof that we are creatures for whom the drinking of water is natural, just so, the fact that we desire an object that our natural world cannot supply suggests the existence of another supernatural one. Everything has to have an origin for Lewis. If we desire something our natural, earthly, material world cannot fulfill, that suggests that there is another supernatural one. Just as the fact that we're thirsty suggests that we are creatures who need water. Now, Lewis is quick to add, the desire does not guarantee that we will achieve that other world. After all, if I'm stranded in the desert, no matter how thirsty I am, I'm going to die for lack of water. But, Lewis says, it does suggest, the intimation of joy now, that we are creatures who are capable of achieving it and who were in some sense made to achieve it. We were made for a higher supernatural world. In a late book called Reflections on the Psalms, Lewis gives what I think is the greatest defense of the immortality of the soul. He says, why is it that human beings are continually surprised by the passage of time? We see somebody we haven't seen for 5 years and we say, my, how he's grown. Now, time is the very essence of our life. We live in time. We know nothing else but time. And yet we are continually surprised by the passage of time. That, Lewis says, would be as strange as if a fish were constantly surprised by the wetness of water. And Lewis says, that would be strange indeed, unless, of course, that fish were destined someday to be a land animal. Do you understand? We are destined for eternity. That is our true home, and therefore time seems always a little bit strange to us. Now, of course, the modernists, especially the Freudians, will tell us that our spiritual longings are merely products of displaced sexual desire, that love is only a sublimation of lust, that heaven is but an illusion, a superstitious wish fulfillment.